Welcome back to There Can Only Be One. I'm Jeremy, as always joined by my co-host
Benjamin Wheeler.
Yeah, we're back. Keeping up a relatively good schedule this time around. Glad to get back on track.
Surprisingly consistent.
Yeah.
There are some road bumps when it comes to the actual getting to record, even after we sit down.
Yeah.
There's a lot of things to keep ourselves preoccupied with. But you know what? We got this down. We got it together. I think this is going to be a good show.
Yeah. We actually started podcasting after playing Smash for about an hour.
Productive.
Typical degen status.
You know, if you're going to degen in one facet of life, you might as well just let that branch out to multiple streams,
yeah.
You know?
In an interesting switch of roles, as you might remember, Liam used to body me in Smash before and after every episode, but now I get to body my co-host.
Now, that's not true. The matches were 60-40, and that's not necessarily getting bodied.
It was worse than 60.
We both came close to getting four-stalked by each other. We can safely say that.
Yeah.
Perfect. Great way to segue into what we're going to be covering today.
Today we're going to be talking about deck building in Highlander, some of the core facets of just how to build a Highlander deck. We talked about it briefly, but didn't go into as much detail. And then we did a live deck building thing, but we're going to go over it more. This time around, and we're gonna go over, we just built a deck before the episode, and we're gonna try going over how we built that deck and seeing how that compares to our live deck build, and if we can explain that a bit better,
touching on the card choices, touching on the numbers.
Yeah, trying to go through our thought process more than just the actual building of the deck, sort of the thought process behind how we made the choices we made.
And I think we picked an archetype that is pretty good for that, because there are a lot of options in the colors. There are a lot of options to go with the overall flow of that kind of deck.
Definitely.
As well.
Definitely. So when deck building Highlander, you're building a 100-card singleton deck, so you definitely need to start with some sort of idea. You need a bit more than color combination. You need to decide whether you're going to play a more controlling deck or a more aggressive deck, and which colors you want to include, and if there's some key cards you want to include or build around. You need some sort of idea that's somewhat tangible. Can't be too vague.
Yeah, I mean, you can have a general idea of, I'm going to build White Weenie. And
that's
pretty straightforward, but even then, like, a deck that straightforward, you have to kind of ask yourself, okay, what kind of White Weenie am I going to build,
exactly,
right?
And am I going to splash? Am I not going to splash?
Yeah, are you, like, where do you want your emphasis, on two or on three? Do you want to play more Disruption?
Exactly, are you going to try and turbo with Moxon, or are you going to, like, play some LD, some Artifact Hate.
And that's just for an archetype that is pretty damn straightforward.
Exactly.
And so you can imagine once you start adding on more colors and more dimensions to what your deck is looking to achieve or what you're looking to combat, then it gets a little more complicated. That said, once you get into the knack of it, it's second nature, right? Like, when you sit down to build a deck on using Cockatrice or just, like, laying the cards out in front of you, after having done it so many times, there are some things that you don't even think about.
Exactly. And the more you do it, the more it'll just come as second nature. But
And there's the added plus side of, the more that you do it, the more sick decks that you get to put together.
Exactly.
Right? Like, even if you crash and burn, you have these great stories to tell, or in your head you can just, like, laugh at how bad that deck was, or, like, I can't believe I
Elf Tribal.
Forgot. Okay, Elf Tribal, sure. All right, big weight. But, like, you get to kind of look back on it too, right? Like, if you think of decks that you've played, archetypes that aren't, you know, super complicated, but you have a lot of options, and you look back at, say, a list you were playing in 2013, 2014, and think about it now, and I'm not talking about new cards that have been added, I'm talking about, like, oh, why wasn't I playing Doran in my junk deck, right?
Turns out that card's good.
Yeah, it turns out 3 mana, 5, that deals 5 repeatedly and hoses a bunch of archetypes is quite powerful.
Yeah, very good against red creatures. Turns out they normally have higher power than toughness.
Makes that ball lightning a nice little 3 mana, 1 damage.
You're probably blocking.
Yeah. Oh, I guess
with,
that
like, your Deathrite Shaman.
Yeah. Which also attacks for 2.
Yeah,
if you need
it's just that card wasn't good enough.
Yeah.
I won a game the other day by beating down with Doran and Birds. Last night, actually.
You're going to have to be more specific. I saw you beat down people with a Doran last night. Was it the god was against Mac?
No, this one was against Chris Sutherland. I had Doran and Birds in play and was attacking him for 6, and then I passed with 3 mana up. He goes to Arctro, my Birds and me, my Birds for 1, me for 2. I Abzan Charm to put 2 +1/+1 counters on my Birds to save it, and then start cracking for 8.
Of the long forgot. See, that's the thing, is that Chris probably hasn't played Standard or looked at Standard.
Yeah.
So he doesn't know.
He read
about
Abzan Charm like 3 times.
Yeah, doesn't know about the old putting 1/1 counters on it. My bet is he hasn't put any 1/1 counters on a Hangerback Walker. I mean, can't
probably.
Say you have either.
Probably
but,
hasn't. No,
yeah.
It wasn't in my deck. It's possible it should have been, but I think I was fine without it.
I think that's usually the case for that card, Hangerback in Highlander. Like, whenever I'm... To go back onto, like, deck building about it, that's a card where whenever I'm thinking about a creature to put in, I'm always like, oh, okay, well, if I could have Trinkamage in here, and then I get Hangerback Walker for free, but I don't necessarily want Hangerback Walker every single time.
Exactly.
Even though the card's gas, right? It's value.
It's very good.
It can be a little slow.
There are definitely some people sleeping on it.
Yeah. Myself included. When I first saw the card, I didn't see the Chronomaton ability.
I remember this.
Yeah, and I was like, this card's awful. Why would you, like, I guess you can put a bunch of mana into it, and then if they kill it. Yeah, 4 mana. Sure, why not? I mean, there's a lot of text.
No, you
on
just
that
keep
card.
Ratcheting it up.
Yep.
Might get more flyers. So once you find your idea that you want to play, there's going to be some cards that go into whatever version you want to play. Like in White Weenie, you're always going to want to play Stoneforge Mystic if you own one. You're always going to want to play
Thalia.
Mother of Runes. You're always going to want to play Thalia. You're always going to want to play like Aven Mind Censor.
Isamaru!
Yeah. There's going to be cards that just go in no matter what. Even if they're sort of the only one of that effect. Like, even if you're not going super heavy Disruption, you're still going to play Thalia. Even if you're not going super heavy 1-drops and you want to focus on going a bit higher, you're still going to play Isamaru and
yeah.
Mother of Runes.
That's your core, right? The Disruption that is so good and that isn't... It's just general Disruption that doesn't always affect you. Like, you can even... This can even stretch to something like Leonin Arbiter, right?
Yeah.
Where you do play fetch lands, you have, like, powerful equipment tutors like Stoneforge or Steelshaper's Gift, if that's your jam. But... It doesn't matter to you as much because you, if you even play fetch lands, you're only really paying 4, right? But this idea extends beyond just the decks that are, I'm White Weenie, I'm playing creatures and turning them sideways. And for a deck, like, if you're playing a deck that is based off of a card, like the name of the deck is Scapeshift. What card are you playing in there? Well, I'm going to be playing Scapeshift. And it's like, it doesn't just stop there. You gotta kind of start... When you're constructing the core, you kind of have to decide, like, okay, if I'm playing Scapeshift, the card in the deck called Scapeshift, how am I killing somebody with that?
Yeah.
So what's your core? Your core is going to be ways to either find Scapeshift
yeah.
to survive until you can kill with it, or to ramp into it. Like, that comes for, like, the idea, right?
Yeah, to make sure that when you draw it or find it, you're able to cast it and win the game off of it.
Yeah, you don't want to just sit on it.
Yeah. It is not a good card to just hold in your hand.
And, like, building the core for those kind of decks isn't as difficult because once you decide what deck you're playing and you decide what route you want to go, you base it off your core cards as opposed to your core cards being necessarily, like, based off of the deck. I mean, that's a little convoluted, but...
Yeah, so that answers one of the points we have here is one of the things when you're building a deck is you have to ask, how am I going to win? With a deck called Scapeshift, it's obvious. You're ideally going to cast Scapeshift.
Yeah.
And kill your opponent with Valakut. You obviously need some other ways to win in case that plan goes belly up. You draw too many mountains, or your opponent thought seizes your Scapeshift, or something else. You definitely need at least a backup plan.
Yeah.
But primarily, your plan is to kill them with Scapeshift. But in a deck like White Weenie, it's ideally you're attacking them, but you want some evasive creatures. You want some equipment, probably. Like, just attacking people with 2/2s probably isn't going to get there. You need to think a little bit deeper than that.
Yeah, when it comes to a very linear strategy like that, I think you want to decide... the question of how you're killing them is can kind of be turned into, like, what is your finisher? What is your haymaker?
Exactly.
So, like, am I running Armageddon, Ravages, and Cataclysm? Or how many, like, 4-mana Planeswalkers am I running? Am I running every Anthem? Like, these are little intricate things that you need to pay attention to, especially. Instead of just kind of, like, copy and pasting... the idea of White Weenie from one format to another,
mm-hmm.
right?
You have to look and see what maybe equipment in one format is the way to win, i.e. Legacy, whereas in Modern, there's not really as much equipment, and you don't have Stoneforge, so the deck isn't as revolved around equipment, it's more revolved around flyers and disrupting your opponent enough so that your flyers can actually win you the game. And
so when you're... It's easy to say, like, to narrow in on that for deck for linear strategies. It's easy to kind of narrow in on that for combo decks that are based off of one central card, or that are based off, like, a collection of them, right? Like,
yeah.
Pattern Rector, you know how you're killing them, and you kind of have an idea on your backup plan.
Yeah.
Like a lot of pod decks, like Kiki decks and whatnot. Crater Hoof is another one that's going to fall into that. But when it gets really complicated is when you're running combo decks that are based on a variety of things, like a sequencing.
Yeah.
So it could be like Eggs, High Tide, even Storm decks. Like, you can say, I'm killing them with Tendrils, but then you still have to ask,
how do,
like,
you get there?
Yeah. Or like control decks, right? Like, do you want to play a big fatty 6 drop that you're going to have stuck in your hand? Or are you going to play, like, Monastery Mentor and grind them out?
And both have pros and cons. Definitely.
There's a meta for every single one of those.
Yeah. And that's another thing to talk about is curve. How high up the curve do you want to go? And that's another mostly meta decision. Like, there have been times where I've seen Warm Coils and Consecrated Sphinxes ruling the top tables. But now I think, at least in our meta, if anyone... plays those cards, it's probably incorrect.
Yeah.
The meta's just too fast to be playing six drops without...
Unless you have, like, Grim Monolith in your deck.
Yeah,
right?
Having, like, serious plans to get there quickly.
Yeah. I'm fine... Personally, I'm fine with one. Like, if somebody tells me they're packing a Wormcoil Engine in their control deck, or, like, if they're on the Rock and they have Prime Time or, like, a Massacre Worm, like, that's... To me, that's fine.
Yeah, having one, maybe two is fine, but, I mean, I'm talking about control decks of the past where they play, like, the first creatures in their deck were, like, Wormcoil, Consecrated Sphinx,
Sun Titan,
Elspeth 6 was an auto-include.
Grave Titan.
Yeah.
Like, basically Titan Summer, like, when all those cards came out, and it was like, oh my god, look at all these incredible six.
I quickly realized the best one, of course, the blue one. Frost Titan.
Frosty? Oh, he wins the war.
Exactly. He just taps down your opponent's Titan, and they never get to attack with it, and they can't kill your Frost Titan.
I mean, you can attack with, Thespian Sage was Node then.
No.
But.
Node was not. No. Thank you.
Prime Time was still pretty good.
I mean, he just got Wolf Run back then.
Yeah, that's not
or
that good,
Valakut.
Right? Yeah. I mean, I guess people were, like, OG grabbing Valakut with their Prime Time and, like, Prismatic Omening.
They sure were.
Out of the game. Oh, those were some, the Wild Wild West days of, Highlander. Man, what were we doing back then? Casting all those six drops.
So many of these good, like, efficient game-ending, like, vintage threat-level creatures is what I call them, like... There's no young Pyromancer. There was no Monastery Mentors. There were no...
Snapcaster Mage.
Snapcaster Mage. True Name Nemesis. Like...
Siege Rhino.
Ugh. these cards that are, like, 3-mana control finishers hadn't been printed yet, so I guess you had to go higher up the curve now, but then, as opposed to now. But now you have more options. You can choose whether you want to go high up. Which definitely have some options. Like, sometimes you play Monastery Mentor and it gets Abrupt Decay immediately, and you're like, well, that was my plan on winning the game. As opposed to the guy sitting there with Consecrated Sphinx, and the guy's like, haha, I'm going to Abrupt Decay whatever he plays. And then you're like, land, Signet, land, Wrath You.
Yeah, the.
Land, Counterspell, land, Consecrated Sphinx, and you're just like looking at your Abrupt Decay. You're thinking about how many cards he's going to draw off this Consecrated Sphinx. And
so that's... you did another very convenient, sly tie-in to curve, because that is a relevant curve, right? If you are on a slower control deck, you're like, okay, my idea is to consistently go a Rock on turn 2, a Wrath on turn 3, Counterspell or, like, big draw spell on turn 5... Sometimes both. Shoutouts to Mystic Confluence.
Oh yeah, that card's
And then turn six, you're just like Haymaker. Or you're like 4-mana Planeswalker with Counterspell backup.
Yeah.
And that's curve. That's fine. That it's not always just like the sly curve of 1, 2, and 3.
Exactly.
But you mentioned something when we were kind of plotting out this deck before we started recording that I found kind of interesting with how you address curve. And that you look at your curve kind of at the end. Now, is that more like of a tweaking process?
Yeah, I found when I add cards in, I am stringent with my curve already. Like, my deck's curves are often too low as opposed to too high, which isn't the problem that most people have.
Yeah.
I love efficient things. It's the engineer in me.
You know that. You were the one that cussed me out for having sleight of hand and serum visions and
yeah.
Just awful I can't get away from them. They're cheap. They draw you cards.
They suck.
I mean, look, if it costs one blue and draws you a card, I'm on board.
But, yeah, so at the end, I look at my curve and... it's often too low, and I need to tweak it to make sure I have things to do after turn two.
So, because, I mean, we talked about this in the past, and this is constantly mentioned when people start talking about Highlander, especially when they're trying to, like, get reference from other formats, like other Eternal formats or other 100-card singleton formats, is that Highlander is this, like, your deck is either a turn 2 or turn 3, or it's turn 3 or turn 4, right? Like, that's when the switch is flipped. That's when the tide of the match, right?
Yeah, I think a lot of matches are more, like, involved than that.
Yeah,
but, like,
I'm boiling it down
you
to...
You definitely want to be doing things on those turns.
Yeah,
like,
that's what I mean, I guess, is, like, if you aren't doing something
on those turns... Your deck's first meaningful play is,
yeah.
like, I'm not counting, like, playing a 2-2 for one. I'm talking about playing, like, a powerful 2-drop, or a powerful 3-drop, or a powerful 4-drop.
Yeah. So, like, and it can be a range of decks, right? If
yeah.
you're not dropping that Signet on turn 2, then what are you doing?
Exactly.
If you don't have Anofenza, like, 4-4 Anofenza on turn 2... Or, like, if you've gone bird and then you don't have Anofenza, you better have a really good 2-drop to follow up, right?
Exactly.
So, for me, that's where my curve sculpting comes in. Is that I look at all my 2s and say, like, okay, that's fine. But I feel like 3s are where it gets really... Like, for most
decks,
they
need
right?
to be super impactful. And every time Spencer's been on, he's mentioned this, but 4-drops have to have a come-into-play ability, even more so for 5s and 6s, obviously. But they have to do something immediately, because if they die, you can't afford to tap that much mana and get no value.
Yeah, haste included.
Yeah.
Or Blastogen.
So, when you build a deck, after looking about how you're going to win, talking about your curve, figuring out what staples go into your archetype that you decided on, you want to sort of look at the tools that are available to you. If you're playing blue, what counter spells you want to play. If you're playing red, what burn spells you want to play. If you're playing a creature deck, what sorts of creatures you want to put in. If you're playing a control deck, if you want, how many wraths you want to play, what spot removal spells you want to play.
If you're a control deck that has black in it or red, are you going to want less control or less Wrath of Gods because you have spot removal, or like, yeah, spot removal.
More spot removal,
yeah.
Exactly. Like, what planeswalkers you want to play, what other finishers you want to play. So you just want to sort of balance these things out. Look at some other lists online and see what sort of ratios they have. Because, and as you play, you'll be able to figure these out. Like, you'll notice if you get Wraths stuck in your hand, you might want to trim down on Wraths. You'll notice if you're playing against aggro decks and you just get your hand clunked up with counter spells, you might want to cut some counter spells for removal spells.
To me, this relates most for with like the card Arc Lightning and Flames of the Firebrand, right? Because if you think that there's going to be a lot of aggro, and you're like, Arc Fork Bolt is great, Arc Lightning is great, I'm going to run the Arc Trail is great. Yeah, sorry, Arc Trail is great. I'm going to want these cards because they're on curve and they just like do the job perfectly, right?
Yeah.
And some weeks that might be less incorrect, but it's not. That's not going to be the case, right? Because you have to kind of say, okay, I'm playing red, so I probably have Bolt. I probably like have Chain Lightning. And if you don't have those, then you might have something like Colgan's Command or like Dreadbore.
Or Electrolyze. Fire Eyes.
You have all these other tools, so you don't have to necessarily feel locked in to that, right? Because these pillars that you have for your deck, be them the tools, if you will, they all have their cores. Like, if you're leaving your house with a blue deck, and you run counter spells, and you're like, who needs Mana Drain? I don't want to get burned, right? No, that's just wrong. Unless you can't find one, and then my condolences.
Yeah, or like, even more so, counterspell, like...
Yeah, just, okay, yeah, good example. Just OG counterspell.
If you're base blue and you're playing counterspells, you're playing counterspell.
I think, to me, Mana Leak is in that category, too.
It is.
Like, that's the core, is, like, Mana Drain, Counterspell, and Mana Leak.
There are actually decks where I didn't play any of the double blue counterspells, just because I wasn't base blue, but I wanted some counters, so I played, like, Spell Pierce, Daze, Mana Leak, but I just didn't want to have to leave up two blue, because I wasn't sure if I was going to have two blue, so...
I mean, Mana Leak is,
Miscalc.
Yeah.
Similar.
Miscalc is always just like, I go from loving the card to being like, I'm always just
like, yeah, like
this.
Your opponent decides around to play around Miscalc but not Mana Leak, and you just want to flip the table.
Oh, that happens every time. I think more. Well, I mean, there are a lot of times where you're like, well, I can't play around Mana Leak.
Or right? Like, it just so happens he's also playing. They're also playing around Condescend by playing around Miscalc,
oh.
But they don't play around Mana Leak, and it just drives you crazy. You're sitting there with, like, three mana, you're like, yeah, I'm going to Miscalc. And he plays something.
And then
he
just
leaves
like,
two up. You're just like, ah.
You grumble under your breath as you cycle
your Miscalc in response.
And then you draw the Complicate. Yeah. And then they're still up one mana. I'm just kidding, I don't play Complicate.
No.
But Chris Sutherland does. And he won last night.
In his deck, he plays Complicated?
I saw it on his Demonic Consultation.
Oh, dear.
I wrote it down because I was like, okay, this might come up.
Don't get got.
Yeah, don't get got by this card.
And so once you've decided what tools you want, and you're searching for those last few cards, I usually turn to the internet. There are a bunch of good resources to find the right cards. There's a ton of deck lists on our website. In the Common Archetype section on our Tapped account, either Canadian Highlander deck database.
Yeah.
MTG Pulse has a lot of German lists, which I look for usually earlier on in the deck building for inspiration, because their lists are enough different that I definitely don't want to copy them.
Yeah, you don't go 100 card copy
but
and paste.
Sometimes you like get some inspiration from those lists. Remember a card or two that you forgot.
Also, just the Facebook is super reliable. Like, if you approach people on the Facebook with, hey, I'm looking to build this deck, or I'm looking to do this, does anybody have
a list?
A list. you will get people just shipping you lists that they might not have posted on Tapped Out or whatnot. It's on their cockatrice, right? Or it's saved to their computer somewhere.
Yeah, I definitely have a bunch of lists on my cockatrice that I haven't.
Yeah, just some pocket
posted.
Lists.
Yeah.
And doing that might actually get the golden pocket lists from people like Jeremy and I. The ones that we've been holding on for that special Monday.
Oh.
And it hasn't come out, but it's like, we won't post it on the page, but we'll message you. We'll send you a message.
Yep, definitely. There's some lists that we don't want to go public with just yet, but provided you sign the NDA we send you.
Yeah.
We'll send. So we're going to go into the blue-eye-red deck that we built just before this. So we sort of somewhat arbitrarily started with creatures. It's sort of a tempo-ish mid-range deck.
Yeah, you...
Like...
You have...
Elements of tempo, but you're definitely tapping out on some turns.
Very, very efficient creatures.
Yeah, and that's the thing. We're not playing any one drops that don't do anything.
Yeah, like Monastery Swift Spear. I guess we'll go through the actual creatures in the deck. So for one drops, we have Grim Lavamancer and Monastery Swift Spear.
Yeah,
and if you're on red, don't leave home without Lavamancer. In my opinion, unless you have Pyroclasms.
I've played red without him. Like if you're on like. Red-green aggro, I don't play him usually.
Really?
Yeah, I just find that your mana's really tight in that deck. You want to end the game by turn 4 or turn 5.
Yeah.
And you just don't have the time to sit there Lavamancing them. You just want something that attacks, or something that taps their mana.
Fair.
We have a bunch of 2s. We have Jace Vryn's Prodigy, who's not especially a creature, but...
And he's more like a nice little planeswalker. You can kind of get people to waste their removal spells on him sometime. Because you have so many cheap cards in this deck.
The next one is a card I think people... I haven't seen played nearly enough. Seeker of the Way. This card's nuts.
This card is slept on. He is... And
Instead of with. He should be slept with.
Slept with?
Yeah, that guy's a homie.
Yeah. I mean, I'd bundle up with this dude.
Yeah.
Like, he's got your back, you know? You're against that red deck?
Lifelink.
Don't worry. Lifelink.
Yeah.
But I've seen him played in some decks, and I feel like it's been a little lackluster when he's like, he's a fine 2-drop in some matches, but he's also just great on turn 4. Right?
Yeah, exactly.
You just play him out, and then you have this counterspell backup, or you have like a removal and a brainstorm or something.
Exactly, and then he's a 4/4 lifelinker.
Yeah.
And just the threat of prowess creatures, I think, is so huge in these blue decks.
Oh, yeah.
Especially when you're playing all the cantrip type things, especially the instants.
You can bluff so hard and just, like, squeak in the points of damage. And for a deck like this especially, squeaking in these little points of damage here and there that are essentially free.
Yeah.
Just, like, let you use your reach end a turn or whenever and then untap and, spoiler alert, you dragon them.
Yeah. So the next few 2-drops we have are Snapcaster. That card needs no explanation of why it's in a blue deck. Soulfire Grandmaster.
Slowly becoming one of my favorite 2-drops of all time.
That card's really, really good, especially if you're playing red.
And Time Walk.
Yeah, sure, it goes in feet with Time Walk.
Go for the gold, folks.
Stoneforge Mystic. You're playing white. If you have points, this card is going in your deck.
Yep. And before we incorrectly say the name of this card, because... it hasn't exactly been updated with the resources we're using, but it's called Storm Chaser Mage. It's a new card from Oath of the Gatewatch. For those that aren't familiar, it's blue and a red for a 1/3. And how many abilities does this guy have?
Flying...
Okay, one.
Prowess.
Oh, that's really good. I'd play that.
Yeah, I'd play that. Oh, and Haste.
Oh, cool. So, for an extra mana, it gains Flying...
Yeah.
A toughness.
Yeah.
And, I mean, well, that's it, but that's pretty good.
Toughness and flying for one mana, yeah.
Pretty good. Not bad. Doesn't die... This is the one blue-red card from the new set that doesn't die to Bolt.
No, that 2/4 also doesn't die to Bolt.
Oh, yeah, I mean, sure, there are other cards in here, but you get what I mean. But no, this guy is... Obviously, we haven't gotten to play with him, but...
Certainly seems exciting.
Pretty sure he's the nut.
Yeah. Seems very exciting.
Yeah. And,
The last one is Young Pyromancer.
Easy!
card also needs no explanation why it's in a blue-red deck with lots of spells.
Yeah, why you're playing this in a deck with a lot of spells, a lot of cheap, efficient spells.
Yeah, exactly.
And then the three drops. Now, this is, again, folks, this is where you can get carried away, and I sure know that I've gotten carried away, especially with this deck in particular for three drops.
Yeah, you really need to narrow down and look at why each card is in the deck, and if it does what you want it to do.
Yeah.
Which is win you the game.
You have blue, white, and red available to you. There are a lot of really good three drops in there that do a lot of different things.
Oh, yeah.
And so you kind of have to... this is where figuring out a general theme comes to play. And you'll notice this with a lot of these guys. They either can reliably crack in because they have some kind of evasion with some... like, as in their... They're difficult to interact with because either they muck around with your opponent
or
their true name nemesis.
Or
they have haste.
Protection,
yeah.
Or something.
Or they make bodies.
Yeah, or they just start going wide or all of the above in Monastery Mentor's case.
Yeah, think of like the 3 mana dudes that end up doing like 6 on the next turn. Or like... They have that, like, the multiplying math.
Yeah,
right?
Exponential.
Yeah, the exponential math right there.
Yeah.
So
we have Aven Mind Sensor, just a really great disruptive flash threat. Flash is an insane keyword in any deck playing blue. In any deck, really, but any deck playing blue especially.
Blue especially.
Brimaz, really big body, goes wide, attacks into just about any other 3-drop.
Difficult to kill, makes more bodies, great with Time Walk, and you can save him with Caracas.
And really, really good with equipment, because he has Vigilance.
Yeah.
God,
I forgot that card had Vigilance.
And all his homies have Vigilance.
Oh no, the Cat Soldiers.
Geist of Saint Traft, one of the fastest clocks out of any 3-drop in the game.
You know, I had an uncle named Traft. Goblin Rabble Master.
One of the other fastest clocks from a 3-drop in the game.
Yeah, what is it? It's 1-5 and then
1-6.
Oh, 1-6 and then like 13 or something.
Something like that.
Been a while since I've done Rabble Master math, but
it's not that much. But
it's a bit absurd. I thought it does like 16 damage or 18 damage over 3 turns. I mean, people have heard this shtick when this card like
it's good. Put it in your deck. Mantis Rider. This card's nuts.
I'm going to put words in your mouth. One of Jeremy's favorite creatures.
Yeah, the card's just really good. I love Lightning Angel, and I played the crap out of Lightning Angel way more than anyone else did. And when this card got printed, I was like, hooey!
You probably played more Lightning Angel than some of the guys that have been around playing, like, Constructed since Invasion Block, too. Or even like, Time Spiral Block.
That's certainly
era,
true.
Rather.
I played a lot of Angel Fire. Then we have the aforementioned Monastery Mentor, probably the best creature in the deck. Yeah, best creature in the deck. Then we have True Name Nemesis.
That card is good.
Yep.
Nice
best
green,
defensive creature in the deck.
Nice green deck idiot.
Yep.
Basically.
And then last but not least, Vendilion Click. Just an insanely powerful card that's played in every Eternal format possible.
This is probably I hate this card so much, like playing with it and playing against it, but you can't leave home without it, right?
Yeah.
It's so good.
Yeah, it's very good. We don't have many 4-drops in the deck.
Which is
creatures.
Good.
We have Lightning Angel. still insane.
Yeah, you can't leave... if you're running a deck called Angel Fire... there's a reason why there's Angel next to that fire.
Yeah, and it's Lightning Angel.
It's certainly not pristine.
And then the only other 4-drop we have in the deck is Thunderbreak Regen. So it's a 4-4 flyer for 4. Doesn't have haste, but if your opponent tries to kill it, they get bolted.
Or one of your other dragons, I believe.
We're getting there.
Yeah, I'm just saying, he's more than just a pretty face.
And then we have two 5-drops in the deck, Stormbreath Dragon and Thunderbolt Hellkite.
Two big dumb dragons that blitz past any Lingering Souls tokens, any stupid, or as I call him affectionately, Idiot Bird, a.k.a. Sensory Mentale, a.k.a. Aven Mind Sensor.
Or Judge's Familiar.
Oh, yeah. Cutity bird, like they just crack in.
Yeah, I mean Thunderbolt gets in through any flyers. Stormbreath is usually the biggest flyer Abyss is their flyers and is really hard for decks to remove, because it turns out white has good removal spells.
Yeah. Can't burn it out.
So that's the creature package. And one thing you'll notice is that the creatures all have either insane utility or win the game by themselves. There's no dirtle.
Yeah, pun not intended. You can actually, no, pun incredibly intended. You can Mantis ride your way to victory.
That was
even
the
when
worst
he's,
thing I've ever heard in my life.
That's not true. I've done much worse. You can just resolve a Mantis Rider, and if they don't deal with it, you can just win off that.
Yeah,
right?
You untap, counter some spells, chuck some fire at their face, and they're toast.
Or as we like to say, go to the dome.
Yep. To the dome. So the next thing we went over was counter spells. And we're not going to go through every single counter spell we put in the deck. But
I imagine we'll have a list up, or at least a link to the
list.
Yeah,
we're going to throw the list on Tapped Out,
yeah.
And we'll have the link in the description, so you can check out the list as we're going over it. But we have the usual suite of 2-mana counter spells, your Mana Leak, Mental Misstep, or sorry, Miscalculation, Mana Drain, Counterspell, Remand. We have some free counters in Mental Misstep, Misdirection, Force of Will. We have some of the bigger counterspell and Cryptic Command. We're not playing all the counterspells. Like, we're not playing Condescend. We're
not
playing
no Condescend.
Not.
No, well, you just took the words right out of my mouth.
Yeah.
The X ones, you're not playing. You're just playing the, like, the strong. You're going to get something off. You're going to get somebody with it.
And we are playing the 2 1-mana counterspells in Spell Pierce and Spell Snare. No Force Spikes. We want our counterspells to counter a spell.
Yeah. Also, just, like, I think we're now at a point where people know if you're on Force Spike Mana Tithe. Like,
days, those types
yeah,
of things.
It's been... people have gotten so salty over it that they are now, you know, playing around it.
Yeah, they actively start playing around those cards.
And cards like Cryptic Command, right? Like, sure, it's a counterspell, and you will play it and counter something with it. But you can also, like, in this deck, you can also just tap down their entire team
and
draw
alpha.
A card. Or tap down their thing and bounce one of their guys. And yeah, Alpha Strike. And when you have cards like Monastery Mentor and Peasy in your deck...
Goblin Rebel Master.
Yeah.
Cards that just represent so much damage.
Yep.
Or
like,
cards that go wide.
The counterspell aspect of that is almost kind of like secondary.
Yeah.
Like, obviously, Cryptic Command is just the nut.
That card's just bonkers. But... And then we added some burn spells. So we added the 2 1-mana burn spells, the 3 damage for 1.
Chain, Bolt.
Yeah, we added some split damage spells. We added Fork Bolt and Arc Trail, the best 2.
Electrolyze and Fire and Ice kind of capped that out, giving you some more cycling if needed.
Then we added 2-mana instant speed, 3 damage. So we Incinerate, Searing Spear, Lightning Strike.
And Lightning Helix, because, hey, we got the colors, might as well gain some life.
Yep. Gain 6 if you have a Soulfire in play.
Oh, that's gotta be the dream. Soulfire and then, like, Lightning Helixing, they're, like, Desperation Blistering Firecat or something.
Gains.
Just gain
no,
6.
No, you just, you Helix their face. And just no block.
Yeah, just now that's disrespectful. They're just like, oh, he doesn't have it. And you're like, before damage. 6U. Or 3U, I'll gain 6.
Yeah.
I mean, that's enough burn that you can, like, use that as removal, but also just gives you the reach that these kind
of
decks...
Speaking of reach, there's one more burn spell. Psionic Blast.
Oh, yeah. Classic. It comes in beta. It does 4 damage.
And you can pitch it to Force.
You can pitch it to Force so well.
Way
what more do you want?
Char. You can cast it off island, so it's easier to fire off multiple burn spells in one turn. Not tying down those red sources.
Part of me is tempted to, want to squeeze in Jeskai Charm in here, but,
That card's just not good. Every time I've played it several times, and you just want it to be good, and it's just never good.
It also just doesn't come in beta. The Europeans also love War Leader's Helix. I've seen.
I've also played that card. It's not good.
Well, it costs 4 mana.
Yeah.
And for starters, there's that.
It's not good.
We have plenty of other 4 mana cards that are quite good.
Yeah. Yeah. Then we added some cantrips. So we wanted to play the good 1-mana ones. So we instantly put in Brainstorm, Ponder, Preordain, Gitaxian Probe.
You're playing blue, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then we put in some really busto cards like Dig Through Time, Treasure Cruise, Ancestral Vision. Just cards that, if they resolve at the right time, they can win you the game on the spot.
Yep.
Like, you're trading one for one a lot, and then all of a sudden you draw Treasure Cruise off the top, and you're just like, oh, sorry.
Might as well. Like, you are going one for one, but you get so much value from your creatures, from the Planeswalkers that will eventually cover.
Exactly.
That you can afford to do that.
Exactly. And then we added some of the more sort of role-playing cantrips. Like, we added Anticipate, we added Impulse, Thought Scour. I love this card. I think this card is slept on. When you're playing cards like Grim Lavamancer, Snapcaster Mage, Jace Vryn's Prodigy, Dig Through Time, and Treasure Cruise in your deck, I'd much rather play Thought Scour. That also has some, like, not irrelevant hate against top of the deck tutors.
Yeah.
Like, somebody Mystical Tutors, somebody Worldly Tutors,
somebody
Vamp Tutors.
Tuesday,
exactly.
Which is a thing.
You just get them. Like, this card can counter pointed cards for one blue mana.
It's not bad.
And draw you a card.
Can get their Werebear online, though, which is a little risky.
Then you probably target yourself, Ben.
See? That's where this card really shines. You get to target yourself.
We added some Planeswalkers, only playing the very, very best ones.
Which are all conveniently in these colors.
Yeah.
Well, shout out to Liliana and Garrickrow on this, but they didn't get invited to this party.
No. A Johnny Vengeant, Dak Faden, Elspeth Knight-Errant, the new boy on the block, Gideon Ally of Zendikar.
Yo, Chad's back with a fresh new haircut.
He doesn't cost
5 anymore.
But he's 4. Still a 5/5.
Yeah.
He used to be a 6/6.
Yeah.
Alright, he only lost 1 power. But 1 power for one reduced mana cost, we take that all day.
Yeah, he's cutting, man.
Yeah.
You know, he's just slimming down. He's going for that, like, otter mode thing.
He brings the homies?
Yeah, he puts out the homies, he bumps up your crew,
yeah.
And then he cracks for 5.
Whew!
And, like, I mean, we have Dak Faden, because he's the greatest thief in the multiverse.
There's just so much utility from Dak Faden. Like, just having him in your deck, your opponent sometimes plays differently, sometimes doesn't. Both ways are probably wrong.
Yeah.
Either play around him or don't play around him. Probably wrong.
He's kind of like this souped up Domri raid where people don't necessarily know whether or not they should, like, kill him.
Yeah.
Especially the aggro decks.
Yeah, exactly. And then he just turns through your decks so fast, powers your Delve spells, turns on your Snapcaster and Grim Lavamancer. So good. And then last but certainly not least, Jace the Mind Sculptor.
Is this guy better than all? Actually, in this deck, I don't even know if he's the best Planeswalker we have, but...
I don't think so. I don't think he's the best Planeswalker we have.
No. I mean, there was a point in time where I was considering not playing him, but I realized how wrong I was. But
very,
the one thing I wasn't
wrong
about was that you always need equipment.
Yeah. Well, especially when you're playing Stoneforge.
Yeah, I mean, that goes without saying, but I guess what I mean is that you get... Not just because Stoneforge, you get a lot of options because you are in blue, right?
Yeah.
You can try and find the ideal piece. You don't need to play Steel Shaper's Gift.
No, definitely not.
Or Relic Seeker. Ugh.
That card's fine.
Eh, it's alright. Hey, you need a foil one?
No, I got one.
Alright, well, so what do we have? Because in an original list, we had Batterskull, Sword of Fire and Ice, and Jitte.
Well, in this list, we have Batterskull, Sword of Feast and Famine, and Sword of Fire and Ice. And Feast and Famine is actually my favorite piece of equipment in blue decks.
I mean, it lets you apply additional pressure while still keeping up all your counterspells or your reach.
Exactly. And just being able to do that is so unfair when you play as many instants as this deck does.
Not to mention the protection colors that you get. Like, that's surprisingly relevant, the black and blue. Because,
black and green.
Or black and green, sorry. Because the things, like... Think about it. The decks where you might not get to counter every single spell that they throw at you, or disrupt everything because it's too big or it has, like, hexproof. It's probably going to be green, and it might have a little bit of black in it. Like, it's bound to be junk, could be Jund kind of thing. Like, being able...
Just dodging that much removal as well.
Yeah.
the dodging the black removal and getting past the green creatures, so key.
And especially because of all the black removal that it's gotten so cheap, right? Like Murderous Cut and whatnot.
Ghastly Demise, Dread exactly.
Boar, all that jazz.
So speaking of removal, for the rest of our deck, we added in Path to Exile, Swords to Plowshares. We added in some pointed cards. We added in Time Walk.
That's kind of removal.
Yes.
Yeah, when you play, your opponent is removed from their seat and has to go and report how they just lost 2-0.
And then our other pointed card is Mox Sapphire that we haven't covered yet.
Blue Mox, not bad.
Yeah,
good
card. Good
card. Powerful card.
Just in any game, being able to start with 2 untapped blue sources and just sitting there with counter spells, begging your opponent to start casting spells.
Oh,
it's a good place
to be. Any game with this deck that you get to have 2 mana on turn 1 is going to be insane. You're either just immediately prepared to deal with whatever they have. You're dropping something like Seeker, it's not the best then, but you're dropping like Seeker of the Way or a Young Pyromancer on turn 2 or turn 1.
Yeah.
So then you just
get to untap with them.
Yeah, that's usually GG.
Yeah.
Or just like being able to get your Haymaker 3 drop on turn 2.
Yeah, that's
right?
The bigger thing. Like, is getting your threat in under their counter spells before they can Wrath.
Your
setup, your defenses.
Your Geist before their Toxic Deluge kind
exactly.
of thing. Yeah.
Exactly. And then of course we threw in some lands.
Might want to cast some spells.
Yeah. So we played all 9 fetches that we can play. We played all 6 duels, that's original duels, and Shocklands. We played A Darker Waste and Shivan Reef. We played Sulphur Falls and Glacial Fortress, forgoing the red-white plain land and the red-white check land. Those are splash colors, and we decided we don't want a land that's just splash colors. We need our blue mana.
That's very common when you're building blue decks, especially. Blue will usually take hold on what color, what your main color is, because
yeah.
It's the best color in the game. And because you're going to need your blue more reliably than your other colors, because your blue can help you find your other colors, it can also help you stop your opponent from killing you, because you might not have your other colors.
Exactly. The other 2 utility lands we played are a Caracas and a Wasteland, and then we just played 10 basics, 6 Island, 2 Mountain, 2 Plains.
And for added reach, Celestial Colonnade and Fairy Conclave.
Exactly.
Just chipping in that extra damage. Nice
giving you additional threats against Wrath decks, just being able to apply pressure from multiple avenues, making them forced to Wrath, and then still having the threat to finish them off with.
And it's when we were talking about adding those man lands, you don't always do something on turn 1 with this deck. Like, all your other cards are so powerful that that's not always a big deal. But if you're in a blind match, you don't always want to ponder on turn 1. You don't always want to preordain, especially when you have all these prowess cards.
Exactly.
Right? So, I mean, playing a Colonnade on turn 1, it's not the end of the world.
No, that's perfectly fine. Or even on turn 3, where you're sitting with counterspells, you don't want to tap out a counterspell anyways. You're not going to play your 3-drop on turn 3. That's not what this deck's all about.
Or you get the sick bluff, where you have, like, no actual interaction for some reason. And you keep this hand, and you go turn 1, untap land, turn 2, Colonnade. And they're just like, oh, he's got the Force Spike. Or he's
or
got the Spell Snare. And then they don't play anything, or, like, they play a
suboptimal
play, and you're like, that's fine. And then for the rest of the game, they're like, oh god, I gotta worry about Force Spike too.
Yeah.
It's the little mice.
So that's our blue or red deck. I hope us talking you through our thought process helped for when you go to build a Highlander deck. If you have any questions about this particular segment, don't hesitate to email us at or contact us at any of our information that we'll shout out at the end of the episode. We have a couple more things to go over before that, though.
That's right. Jeremy has to brag a little bit.
Of course. Wouldn't be an episode.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Chair bragging.
I mean, that's
there's
a time-honored tradition. We have Jeremy bragging, and we have jabs at Stefan Bard. Have we made them yet? Oh,
no,
we missed them.
We missed it.
Oh. Okay, so just to recap, you want win conditions in your deck. Unless you're going with the Stefan Bard approach of deck building, which is your win condition is Baleful Strix.
He's been better.
No, yeah, he's playing Tassiter.
I mean, he was a total homie and drew in the last round of last night to Dream Crush the fifth XO.
Yeah, if you ever need anybody to do that, you call on the Bard.
Oh, yeah.
I joking,
will not lose.
I joking.
Or win.
I made a joke when I was sitting next to him, because Spencer was playing against Stefan, and Spencer made a comment about Stefan's speed, and I said, hey, he's playing Tarmogoyf, it's a better Wall of Blossoms. And then Stefan just turns to me and he's like, I'm playing both.
Yeah, back to me bragging.
Yeah, please continue.
So I held a Vintage Lander tournament last week. That's Highlander with no points list. We don't get to play it very often, so it's an exciting thing. I put up some sweet prizes. Second place got a Future Sight Tarmogoyf.
That's pretty good.
Third and fourth got some store credit. We only had 19 people. Originally, the prizes were going to be slightly spicier.
Yeah.
And first place got an unlimited time walk.
That's pretty
and
good.
I put up all these prizes. No one was able to beat me. I lost one game the entire tournament. Shout out to Alistair Norman.
I heard there's a bit of a salty sweet going on.
Yeah,
we're
going to play a Vintage Lander grudge match next week.
Nice.
I won my own time walk back.
Well, there you go. That's a pretty nice little reward. What did you play?
I played Grixis Control.
I assume Time Vault's in there.
Time Vault was...
Is it like a Grixis Keeper deck, or is it more a traditional control deck?
Kind of in between. I played some aggressive threats. Like, I played Pyro, Click. I didn't play True Name.
Did you play Bob?
No Bob.
Death Rite?
No Death Rite.
Oof.
Many, many counter spells. Many, many draw spells.
I imagine so.
Fast mana. Won maybe 60 to 70% of my games with Time Vault.
I mean, it's a good card.
Yeah. I won a few games. I had Painter Servant Grindstone in the deck as well. And I won a few games that way.
Nobody's playing any Emrakuls? Did you run into any Oath decks?
No. No, I don't think there was a single... No, there was one Oath deck, I think.
Like an Oath Storm List or something?
I didn't get a good look at it. I didn't get a good look at it. I think I saw one Oath deck. I don't think it was a dedicated Oath deck. I think it was a deck with Oath in it as opposed to an Oath deck.
Yeah.
But it was a really fun tournament to see what people came up with. The meta was far more fair than I think anyone was anticipating.
And I didn't get to compete in this event, but if for future events and for future just jamming the format, I'm super interested, and I think...
I think there's definitely room for this format to grow. I wouldn't want to play it every week by any means, but, once every three or four months, I'd be super down to jam.
Yeah, and I think that the more people play it, the more they'll realize how unfair they can get or how fair they can get.
Exactly,
right?
Yeah.
And they'll pick up on what cards they think might be alright to jam because, oh, this card's played in Vintage. I'm going to try this out.
Yeah.
And there are going to be cards like that don't actually do anything. And then there are going to be other cards, I imagine Flusterstorm is one that was kind of, up in the air. Some people are like, I'm not playing this. And other people are like, Snap Jam. Yeah, I mean, I'm in the Snap Jam category, but, I imagine there are some people that are like, I don't know.
Like, Nelson's deck was super interesting. It was actually my list, but he played a Hate Bears deck with no Lotus, no Time Vault, just get them.
Just get them?
Is
anybody playing Five Color Humans?
No.
You can't see it right now, folks, but I'm raising my eyebrows.
Nelson's deck was, kind of close to it. Stefan Januszewski played Wildfire and Burning.
Jesus.
And I just barely got him to cut Lava Ball Trap before the tournament. He still contests. It would have been good. I somehow don't believe him.
Yeah, I'm having a real hard time with that one.
But
love me a Lava Ball Trap.
He's like, oh yeah, it's basically Wildfire. I'm like, no, Destructive Force is basically Wildfire.
Yeah, Burning is basically Wildfire.
Yeah,
there are slight differences.
He wanted a third one, and immediately went to Lava Ball Trap.
That's an aggressive leap.
Yep, it sure is. So, recap that tournament. It was awesome. I'm probably going to try and host another one since I still have two time walks and want to shift one. I want to keep it within the community, though.
No,
like,
yeah.
I don't want to ship it to some rando.
And might as well do it while playing a pretty sick format.
Exactly. So, what the heck are we playing?
What'd you play last night there, Jer?
I played Junk Blade with a slight, ever so slight slant to never losing to red decks ever.
Yeah, I noticed a bit of salt in your voice when you got Earwig squatted and you had three of your life gain cards removed, and you're like, I got to see your deck as it was getting through.
Oh, yeah. Mac Earwig squatted me, and he was like, oh, no. You really didn't want to lose.
You were just rubbing your hands, like, chuckling, just like, I'm not losing to you today.
Maniacal laughter. Mac drew reasonably, but I still won that game.
I did fairly. Before I even saw the card, and I saw that you had, like, a Savannah in play, I was like, in my head, I was like, Jeremy definitely has a Sigarda in this deck.
Oh, yeah, I do.
Sure. And you 3-1?
Yeah, I punted against Chris Sutherland.
Oof.
Punted really badly.
Almost two of us.
I thought seized him or duressed him or something. Or no, he was flipping to Bob, and he flipped a misdirection and a daze. And it was like, fast forward 7 turns, I got him on the ropes. I play right into misdirection. I try and path his blocker, and then he misdirects it to my threat, which is bigger than his blocker. Like, I didn't need to path his blocker. He had like a Snapcaster. I had a Loxodon Smiter. Like, no reason to path this guy.
It's not much bigger than that. Dude.
When I know he has misdirection, and so I punt that, and then I play Marin of Clan Nel'Thoth into a daze that I also know he has later on. So I like double punt that game into cards I know he has. It was
classic blunder.
Not my finest moment. But it was a good deck.
Would you play it again next week?
I mean, I usually run decks back. But
yeah, but you know what I mean. Like,
that deck's very good. Can easily win the tournament. I think I might have won the tournament if I didn't punt.
If you weren't as big as a degenerate as you are, would you run it back?
Yes.
Perfect. All right, what are you... So then, can you give us a hint on what you might be thinking about playing next week?
I think I'm going to run Grixis Tempo. Sort of similar to... Or mid-rangey. Sort of similar to the deck we built, but I want to try a Grixis slant on it.
Tastiger.
Yeah, Chris's deck looked pretty close to what I wanted to try and play.
I think that was a good example on how we touched before, on how you can build a control deck with a low curve.
I actually sent him that message, and he didn't even know that was our... We mentioned that on the podcast last time, but I was like, yes, makes us look like geniuses!
Perfect. Give some advice, wins the tournament, not too shabby.
I mean, he definitely didn't listen to the podcast.
No, I mean, that's a slow...
But nobody needs to know that.
No. And they'll never know.
Exactly.
They'll never know.
So what were you playing?
I played red deck wins with a bunch of blue cards before.
Yeah.
And I was losing. Like, I had reached a point where I forgot what it was like to win a match of Magic.
Yeah.
And that's just a bad, bad feeling.
It's not good.
So then I sat down and I talked to Colin a bit. Colin Miller, local red deck wins player who typically wins with his red deck.
Yep.
And I was
sure
like,
does.
"What? Can I see your list? Like, what's going on?" And I've ran lists of his before, and I've 3-1 with them. I won a Thursday with it. Like, the guy knows Burn, right?
Yeah.
He knows his red. And
you don't call him the Magus of the Moon for nothing.
So I learned from that. I went home. I cut all the expensive Burn, like a lot of the expensive Burn cards, like my 3-mana spells. Super low. My 4-mana spells, there was only Firecat now.
Okay.
From, like, Elemental Appeal, Fiery Confluence.
Glad you finally got rid of that.
I love me some Elemental Appeal still, but that's another story. Went down to, like, a lot of 1-drops. Like, I gritted my teeth and played Goblin Arsonist and Scorched Rasalka.
Ooh.
hey, they're good against Jite. The only blue cards I played were Treasure Cruise and Recall.
I think that makes more sense.
Yeah.
Than what you were playing.
I had Delver last week, which was pretty funny.
I beat you round one, remember?
Yeah, that was awful. You mized your Sphinx. It was because of that, because I had... So Jeremy sacks out and gets Sphinx off of Bloodbraid Elf and just, like, has a Sphinx, both on key turns where I have lethal, and then he gains two. And then I'm forever gone. Like, I'm dead. Because all my cards are so expensive.
Yep.
And I can't do multiple in a turn, right?
Yep. I was playing red-green aggro.
Yeah.
With pump spells.
And so...
Preserved two people.
I had enough of that. I wanted cheap spells... I wanted cheap cards that did things, and ended up going 3-1.
Yeah, you wanted to lose the spells you cast, as opposed to spells you didn't cast.
Yeah, my loss was also to Chris Sutherland.
That's unfortunate.
I kept a bit of a sketchy 7 card in game 1,
yeah,
but I was
you
on the draw.
To Chris? I couldn't have ever lost to you.
I did it just to spite you.
Damn it, Ben.
But, yeah, I kept a bit of an iffy 7 card hand that... had a lot of potential, and it just didn't play out. Like, neither of us were really doing anything, and my cards are... They were more, like, stuff that you would use for reach and not to, like, initiate, right?
Yeah.
Like, if I go, like, Pillar of Flame, you go.
It's
like, that's pretty weak.
Yeah,
pretty weak.
Not
and
very
then
good.
I just didn't draw into... I drew a lot of lands, and then when I finally tried to get off a recall, he misdirectioned, and I swooped.
Oh, yeah, I saw that.
And then game 2, I just... I punted with Jite. I think I got a... I could have got him to use his counters and then just killed him with burn, and he just didn't take it.
Mm.
And I missed my chance, too. But, yeah... As for next week, I will not be playing red deck. I have cards that should be arriving tomorrow or in
Ooh,
the next day.
What are those cards?
Oh, there might be a Time Walk. There might be a Breemaz. Actually, it's a blue-white-red mid-range. Maybe we've covered that deck before.
Maybe a little tempo-y.
A little tempo-y, a little dragon-y. Got some of that, and then also the rebirth of Cradlehoof. I will have the cards for Pester Twin, like Kiki Twin Cradlehoof, and I will kill Spencer with Tooth and Nail for Cradlehoof Kiki Jiki by the end of the year.
Excellent.
I will.
Excellent.
I got $100 riding on this. I better do it.
Well, I think.
Yeah, that's
time. Time for shoutouts. Shoutout to MTGCast, as always, hosting us. They're awesome. We're on Twitter, at Can Highlander. Email, CanadianHighlanderMTG@gmail.com. Our awesome website keeps getting updated. CanadianHighlander.wordpress.com. If you ever need to see the points list, deck lists, what's going on in general, usually our website has the answers.
Also, our Facebook page.
Yep.
Just MTG Canadian Highlander. You'll know the one when you see it.
There is only one.
There can be only one, actually. And if you get on there, you ask questions, you're going to get a response from council members, veterans, or people also asking questions like that. And it's going to probably come pretty quickly. There's a lot of good discussions going on there.
Yep. This is me. Take it on the V1. See ya.
See ya.